Welcome to the Counter Vortex with your ranter, Bill Weinberg. Ranting at you in the wee hours of April 21st, 2024, as always from my apartment on Manhattan's Lower East Side, which fortunately is not under aerial bombardment. Yes, ranting on the night of April 21st, which means that tomorrow, or perhaps by the time you are listening to this today, it will be April 22nd, marking exactly 81 years since the Nazis burned the Warsaw Jewish ghetto in response to the desperate armed uprising there, which had broken out 2 days earlier. The uprising was launched as a last stand against deportation to the Treblinka death camp, which was escalating because Warsaw's Nazi administrators wanted the city Judenrein, Jew-free, as a birthday present to Hitler. His birthday, still annually celebrated by neo-Nazis from Berlin to Idaho, was April 20th, which that year also happened to be the day of the Passover holiday. The Nazis brought in thousands of SS troops led by assault unit leader Jürgen Strup, who would be hanged for war crimes by Polish authorities after the war, and used warplanes to drop incendiary bombs on the ghetto. But for all that, the ghetto was not Judenrein. For the Führer's birthday, the resistance fighters had prepared tunnels and bunkers under the ghetto and held out for another 3 weeks, emerging in the ruins and skirmishing with the German troops. Some 300 Germans and 7,000 Jews were killed in the uprising, and another 7,000 of the ghetto's remaining Jews were deported to Treblinka. Much of this is depicted in a very important and powerful movie I saw this week at the Firehouse Cinema for documentary film on Lafayette Street here in Lower Manhattan, entitled Resistance, They Fought Back, telling the story not only of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, but the earlier uprising in the Kovno Ghetto in Lithuania that same year, and later resistance, including actual armed resistance within the death camps, including Treblinka and Auschwitz. The film was produced by Paula Aspel, former executive producer of the Nova science television series on PBS, and one of the prominent figures interviewed is Professor Richard Freund, the late archaeologist. He died 2 years ago, who carried out investigations at sites associated with the Holocaust in Europe, documenting evidence both of the crimes committed there, such as mass graves, but also resistance activities, such as a tunnel dug by Jews to escape from a camp in Lithuania. I'm going to read a brief quote from Professor Freund, which is displayed on the film's website, theyfoughtback.com. Quote, "People have this myth stuck in their heads that Jews went to their deaths like sheep to the slaughter. But this is where the real story begins. Jews did not go as sheep to the slaughter. They fought back," end quote. And this is the real insidious Holocaust revisionism. The idea that it didn't really happen or was exaggerated is universally rejected in respectable society. Whereas the idea that Jews went to their deaths like sheep to the slaughter is virtually universally accepted. And this is also Nazi propaganda, the notion that these Untermenschen, or subhumans, were incapable of resistance. The film also features interviews with aging survivors and their offspring, as well as historians and scholars. Very important to get such interviews committed to medium and collective memory now that the last of these survivors are dwindling in number. My one criticism of the film really is that it couldn't resist the lore of digital effects. It uses a lot of actual documentary photographs from the period, which is good. Some of them very difficult to look at, as you might imagine. But then, in many cases, it gratuitously tweaks the photos to make them move and come alive, which to me detracts from the power of the images. And I actually think is a little dangerous, given all of the denialism and revisionism about the Holocaust. You don't want to do anything to encourage the idea that these images are altered. I think they should just be presented scrupulously as is. Interestingly, the film has the same title as a book, They Fought Back, the story of Jewish resistance in Nazi Europe, edited by Yuri Shul, Schocken Books, New York, 1975. Long out of print, although I have a copy in my personal library, one of my prized possessions. I'm not sure if the film explicitly took its name from the book, or if it's just a coincidence, but I'm going to read a selection of chapters from the table of contents. Revolt in Sobibor, which was one of the death camps in Poland. The Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. Uprising in Treblinka. The Bialystok Ghetto Revolt. That's where my peeps are from, by the way. My great-grandfather was born there. Fortunately, he got out well before the war. The resistance movement in the Vilna Ghetto. The resistance of the Slovak Jews. Underground assignment in Auschwitz. About inmates who documented what was going on there and smuggled out photographs to alert the world. Rosa Robota, heroine of the Auschwitz underground. She was one of three women who was hanged in 1944 for smuggling gunpowder out of the arms factory within the Auschwitz complex, where they were working as slave labor, to make explosives that were used to blow up one of the crematoria at the camp. The resistance movement in the ghetto at Minsk. The Bulgarian Jews in the resistance movement. Diary of a Jewish partisan in Paris. The resistance of the Jews in Italy. The Jewish resistance movement in Belgium. Etc. Much nearly forgotten history. I just went back and reread the chapter on the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. I also want to briefly point out that the Holocaust Memorial in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn, is almost unique in emphasizing not only Jewish suffering, but Jewish resistance, and is actually very didactic, conveying a lot of information with not just one plaque on the central sculpture, but several plaques on smaller stones erected around the central sculpture, giving basic details on many of the aforementioned instances of Jews fighting back across Nazi-occupied Europe. Of course, the monument has been repeatedly vandalized, including in August 2022, when swastikas and the word fuck next to a Star of David were scrawled on the base of the central sculpture, and last November when what police called an inert grenade was found at the site. Now, if you can find the book, They Fought Back, you can be filled in with great detail on this history, or see the film of the same title if you can catch a screening for a good 90-minute overview. But what I really want to talk about is the politics of the Jewish resistance in this period and what it has to say about the current situation in which the Jewish state has crossed a genocidal threshold in the Gaza Strip, something which was not mentioned in the Q&A following the film with Paula Aspel, who was on hand, and the Holocaust historian Avinom Pat, author of The Jewish Heroes of Warsaw, which I have not read, but now intend to. Curious what they would have said if any of the questioners had brought it up, which I confess I failed to do so. But let me jump into it here. Now, first, as an anti-Zionist, I am nonetheless vindicated that the film acknowledges the role of Zionists in the resistance, because I'm really tired of the revisionism popular in anti-Zionist circles, that the Zionists were Nazi collaborators, full stop. It does no service to the Palestinian cause to alter history. Now, there are a few grains of truth to this distortion, to be polite, a few grains of truth that it is based on, and I can explore them in another podcast if people are interested. Be in touch in the comments or via email, and if enough people want me to do it, I'll consider it. But there was a Zionist armed resistance in Nazi Europe, particularly the Hashomer Hatzer, or Youth Guard Militia, which I don't believe was actually mentioned by name in the film, but definitely was in the Q&A after the film. And many, perhaps most, of the partisans who went down fighting in the Warsaw Ghetto were Zionists, as is noted in the film. I'm considerably less happy that the film does not acknowledge the anti-Zionists among the Jewish resistance who were also among the partisans who went down fighting in the Warsaw Ghetto. As is detailed in the book They Fought Back, the resistance in the Warsaw Ghetto and the Jewish resistance in Nazi-occupied Europe generally basically fell into three categories: Zionists, communists, and Bundists. The last were the most interesting. The Bundists were, again, mentioned in the Q&A at the screening I attended, but I don't believe they were actually mentioned in the movie. They were adherents of the General Jewish Labor Bund, or Union, founded about the same time as the Zionist movement in the 1890s, but an openly rival tendency. The Bund ultimately sought to unite all Jewish workers in the Russian Empire, which at that time included much of Poland, as well as the Baltic countries, into a socialist party and unify with the wider Russian and Polish social democratic movements and fight for a dignified and secure place for Jews within Europe. It rejected Zionism as escapist and an abdication of this struggle, while the Zionists promoted Hebrew as the Jewish national language, the Bund embraced Yiddish. But both the Bundists and the rival Zionists came together in the resistance in Nazi Europe. The Bund ceased to exist in Russia after a kind of forced merger with the communists after 1917, but lived on in Poland and was only dissolved in 1948, partly due to the communist takeover of Poland, but also due to Zionism becoming the overwhelming consensus among the surviving European Jews at this time for reasons that should be obvious. In the Warsaw Ghetto, the overall commander of the Jewish Combat Organization, or ZOB, was Mordecai Analevich, I believe that's how his name is pronounced, who was a Zionist and, in fact, had been interned in a camp in the Soviet-controlled part of Poland in 1939 for attempting to smuggle Jews out through Romania to Palestine, but managed to escape and made his way back to Warsaw to lead the resistance there. He was killed on May 8, 1943, when the Nazis used poison gas to flush out the tunnels and bunkers that the resistance fighters had dug under the ghetto. But one of the three ZOB subcommanders was Marek Edelman, who is quoted in the film, but not really discussed, certainly not his politics. He survived and would die in Warsaw, the city of his birth, in 2009 at the age of 90, the last surviving leader of the uprising, and he continued to live a fascinating and heroic life after the war. Edelman, just 23 years old at the time of the uprising, was a member of the youth section of the Bund, and as the uprising was crushed, he escaped the ghetto through the sewers and joined with the Polish resistance, participating in the following year's General Warsaw Uprising of August 1944, which was also brutally put down by the German occupation. Before we discuss Edelman's anti-Zionism, I should point out a couple of other things about the politics of the resistance. First, the Zionists were themselves divided, and in addition to the ZOB, made up of both Zionists like Mordecai Analevich and Bundists like Marek Edelman, there were the right-wing so-called revisionist Zionists who had their own Jewish Military Union, ZZW, which cooperated with the ZOB but was separate from it. A lot of revisionist anti-Zionism today conflates the revisionists with the entire Zionist movement, which is a distortion. We can say more about revisionist Zionism some other time and their controversial stances and activities regarding both the war in Europe and the colonization of and subsequent war in Palestine. I just want to note that they were also part of the resistance in the Warsaw Ghetto. And I should say something about the relationship between the Jewish resistance in the ghetto and the general Polish resistance in Warsaw outside the ghetto in the so-called Aryan Zone, as it was designated by the Nazis. What weapons the ghetto fighters had were smuggled in by the Home Army, the main Polish resistance organization, but these were few weapons, and the Home Army resisted the call to hold a simultaneous Polish uprising in Warsaw generally outside the ghetto. The People's Guard, the communist Polish resistance organization, at least attempted a few armed actions outside the ghetto in solidarity with the ghetto uprising. The Home Army did not. So considerably less than full-fledged support. And it should be noted that the general Polish resistance was on a different timeline. They did not want to be prematurely crushed before the Allies could advance on Poland, as might have been the case if they rose up, whereas the Jews were being exterminated very rapidly and had nothing to lose. Okay, on to Edelman's anti-Zionism. Edelman later wrote, quote, "The Bundists did not wait for the Messiah, nor did they plan to leave for Palestine. They believed that Poland was their country, and they fought for a just socialist Poland, in which each nationality would have its own cultural autonomy, and in which minorities' rights would be guaranteed." End quote. This quote is online at the page about Edelman on the Jewish Virtual Library website, and I give them major creds for displaying this quote despite their basic Zionist assumptions. You can check them out at jewishvirtuallibrary.org and just search for Marek Edelman at the website. As I blogged at the time, the October 2nd, 2009, passing of Edelman occasioned respectful but generally sanitized eulogies in the world Jewish press, with few exceptions neatly avoiding any mention of his anti-Zionist politics. Among their better accounts appeared in the Jerusalem Post, which noted that after the war, quote, when the majority of those from his generation who survived the Shoah chose to go to Palestine, Edelman decided to stay in Poland. He married and became a cardiologist, but lost his job in one of the communist regime's anti-Semitic purges in 1967. His wife emigrated to France after this with their two children, but Edelman again chose to stay in Poland. When questioned why, he said, "Someone had to stay with all those who died here," quote unquote. In the 1970s, while reviving his cardiology career after the purge subsided, he helped form the dissident Workers' Defense Committee, an early precursor of the Solidarity Trade Union. He was briefly imprisoned for this activity. In 1983, with Poland under martial law following the Solidarity strikes, he refused to participate in the official 40th anniversary commemoration of the ghetto uprising organized by the communist authorities. In 1988, when things were beginning to loosen up in Poland, he released his memoir of the uprising in pamphlet form entitled The Ghetto Fights for the 45th anniversary, an important first-hand account for subsequent scholars and historians. And meanwhile, in Israel, Edelman became something of an unperson. I again read from the Jewish Virtual Library page and give them credit for being forthright about it. Edelman was a lifelong anti-Zionist. In a 1985 interview, he said that Zionism was a lost cause, quote unquote, and he questioned Israel's viability. He also became a supporter of the Palestinian cause, which alienated many Israelis, especially survivors of the uprising who had settled in Israel. Moshe Arends, the right-wing Israeli statesman and revisionist Zionist, I will parenthetically add, said he tried to convince a number of Israeli universities to award Edelman an honorary doctorate in recognition of his role in the uprising, but ran into stubborn opposition led by the Holocaust historians in Israel. And Edelman died not having received the recognition from Israel that he so richly deserved. Quote unquote, that last line, a verbatim quote from Moshe Arends. And I want to close by noting Edelman's most forthright and controversial statement of anti-Zionism in the post-war period. In August 2002, in the midst of the Second Intifada, he wrote an open letter to all Palestinian resistance organizations appealing to them, in only slightly cloaked terms, to refrain from suicide bombings. The text of the letter made clear that he saw the Palestinian struggle as legitimate and even analogous to the Jewish resistance movements in World War II. Most controversially, the text was entitled Letter to Palestinian Military Organizations, quote unquote, an obvious reference to the Jewish combat organization of the Warsaw Ghetto Resistance. I will read from the text. Quote, to all the leaders of the Palestinian military, paramilitary, and guerrilla organizations. To all the soldiers of Palestinian militant groups, my name is Marek Edelman. I am a former deputy commander of the Jewish military organization in Poland, one of the leaders of the Warsaw Ghetto insurrection. In the memorable year of the insurrection, 1943, we were fighting for the survival of the Jewish community in Warsaw. We were fighting for mere life, not for territory, nor for national identity. We were fighting with a hopeless determination, but our weapons were never directed against the defenseless civilian populations. We never killed women and children. In a world devoid of principles and values, despite a constant danger of death, we did remain faithful to these values and moral principles. We were isolated in our fight, and yet the powerful opposing army was not able to destroy these barely armed boys and girls. Our fight in Warsaw lasted several weeks, and later we fought in the underground and in the Warsaw insurrection of 1944. Yet nowhere in the world can a guerrilla force bring conclusive victory. Just look around you. Look at Ireland. After 50 years of bloody war, peace has arrived. Formerly deadly enemies have sat down at a common table. Look at Poland. Without a shot being fired, the criminal communist system has been defeated. Both you and the State of Israel have to radically change your attitude. You have to want peace in order to save the lives of hundreds and perhaps thousands of people and to create a better future for your loved ones, for your children. I know from my own experience that the current unfolding of events depends on you, the military leaders. You are wise and intelligent enough to understand that without peace, there is no future for Palestine, and that peace can be attained only at the cost of both sides agreeing to some concessions. End quote. 2 points to be made in this regard, if I may. First, the inherent justice of the Palestinian cause does not mean that any tactics, even monstrous ones, are justified in advance of that cause. It is way too late in the day for that kind of thinking, and I continue to be appalled by the Hamas standing that continues to be seen in some anti-Zionist quarters. The denying, justifying, relativizing, or outright glorifying of the October 7th attacks. Now, I have noted before that Masha Gessen has compared the Gaza Strip to the Warsaw Ghetto. And I will further point out the parallel between the tunnels dug under the ghetto by the ZOB and the Hamas tunnel networks under Gaza, now so much in the news. And there are also parallels between the Israeli response in Gaza and the Nazi response in Warsaw, especially in the dropping of incendiary bombs on the ghetto. However, I also feel the need to point out, as Edelman did in his letter, that the Warsaw ghetto fighters didn't attack German civilians. And of course, they didn't have any opportunity to do so in any case. And the counter argument I hear is that the German occupation didn't go on for 76 years, or 57 years if you start counting in 1967. And Palestinian attacks on civilians didn't really begin in earnest until the Second Intifada, which began in 2000. Yeah? Okay. It can also be pointed out that while Israel has crossed a genocidal threshold over the past 6 months, it still isn't at the level of industrialized, hyper-efficient mass extermination carried out by the Nazis. And I don't see what's to be gained from making Hamas and its criminal tactics above criticism. But the second point, it is only those who recognize the inherent justice of the Palestinian cause who have any moral grounds to criticize monstrous tactics when employed by Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Otherwise, it comes across as petty point scoring and cynical exploitation of moral outrage. And in most cases, it probably is. Certainly, apologists or outright supporters of Israeli state terror have no legitimacy to oppose Palestinian terrorism, as it is called. But my overall point in this rant is to repudiate the propagandistic conflation of anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism, now promoted by the Jewish establishment in the United States and officially embraced by the U.S. government, pursuant to Donald Trump's executive order of December 11, 2019, not overturned by Biden, which formally recognizes the problematic working definition of anti-Semitism, drafted by the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, IHRA, as we discussed in our podcast of March 21st. This working definition lists contemporary examples of anti-Semitism. On this list, officially endorsed, although not actually quoted in the executive order, is the following item, quote, denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination, e.g. by claiming that the existence of a state of Israel is a racist endeavor, end quote. Which, I will add, it simply is. And the official embrace of this cynical and revisionist conflation is deepened by the resolution passed by the House of Representatives just this week, condemning as anti-Semitic the phrase, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Which, whatever Hamas may mean when they bandy about that slogan, can certainly be taken to mean advocacy of a single secular state with equal rights for all in the entirety of historic Palestine, and the corollary notion that it is in the enlightened self-interest of Jews to fight anti-Semitism and Jew hatred in the diaspora and make common cause with the oppressed rather than rally around an oppressive settler state. And this conflation is also, paradoxically, a form of Holocaust revisionism, or at least revisionism about the Jewish resistance in the Holocaust, excising from historical memory the legacy of fighters like Marek Edelman. Go argue with Marek Edelman, International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. I hope his ghost comes back to haunt you. This has been Bill Weinberg with the Counter Vortex. Check us out online at countervortex.org, where everything I rant about is fastidiously blogged up, documented, and hyperlinked. Please support us on Patreon. We need a dollar or two a week from you, dear listener, to keep going. Patreon.com/countervortex. Join the Counter Vortex. Join the resistance, and rant on you next time.